Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Stomp TV podcast. My name is Jason Wise. If you're like me, you're watching sort of what used to be the hospitality industry, and you're sitting and trying to work surrounded by children and Zoom calls and all the things that are whatever the hell our lives have become. And you're wondering how to help. And we're no different over here at Stomp TV. My team is scattered all over the place. We happen to be based in Los Angeles, but we're just sort of watching all of our friends not know what to do, not know how to go through life and not be able to do what they want to do at their job. And it's crushing. We've been trying to do a few things. One, on Stomp TV, there is a really great film right now for rental only. And 100% of the proceeds go to the Lee Initiative, which is feeding and helping to support restaurants all over the country, all over the United States. And that film is called A Chef's Journey. So if you go to SomTV.com and rent that particular movie, and there are three price points, it's all just a donation. And this is the world premiere, the only way you can see this film. It's about three Michelin-starred chef at Manresa, and he takes his team all over the world, and they go through. It's pretty incredible journey. I really recommend that you watch that. Also, if you're in the giving mood, there are several organizations. One is No Kid Hungry. I think it's probably one of the most important ones. So many kids right now are depending on hot lunches at school, and it's some of the only meals they get. And with no schools being in session, it's a terrifying time for children where that is their main source of nourishment. So that would be another one that I strongly recommend. Stomp TV, over the next, all of us, my team, everybody, we're going to be working very hard to figure out how do we help? What do we do? We want to hear your thoughts for sure. Please drop us a private message, or, you know, we're on Instagram and Twitter and everything. But we also want to hear from you. If you are a restaurant chain, if you are a restaurant employee and you're put out of work by the current situation, the least we can do is get you a Stomp TV subscription. So please send us a private message. Instagram is best, fastest for us to reply to, Stomp TV or the Stomp Films or Twitter. We will find a way to get back to you. There's no reason you shouldn't be able to visit beautiful wine regions and amazing restaurants while you're stuck at home. And if we can at least do that, we want to do it. On today's Stomp TV podcast, I'm going to be talking to Brian McClintic. I'm sick of talking about wine. So we're going to talk about cider. And Brian is obsessively moving into cider from both a beverage standpoint, from the way it tastes, but also for environmental reasons. And I think it's a really budding passion for him. And it's good because cider is a delicious thing. We have something incredible in the works. Later on, probably the beginning part of next year or later this year, a very comprehensive documentary about cider. So I'll get in trouble for saying that. But before I talk with Brian, I want to say our card game, we invented a blind tasting card game called Blinders. It completely sold out in a matter of a couple weeks, probably on our first printing. We have it up for pre-order again, and it will sell out. We should be shipping in May when the cards all get to our warehouse. That is at blindersgame.com. And we do ship internationally, so if you're in Europe, I know there's a lot of people who listen who are in Europe and South America. If you are there, yes, we do ship to Europe. Yes, we do ship. And of course, you know, COVID and all that stuff's going to have an impact, but we ship all over the world. blindersgame.com. All right, so without further ado, I'm going to talk to my good friend Brian McClintic in a two-part podcast. This one about cider. The next one, which is coming up in a couple days, is about the oral history of him and I making Psalm 1. You said something to me before, just when we were talking, that I think a lot of people would be very fascinated about cider.
Right.
And I think let's talk a little bit about apple cider, which comes in a few different forms, right? I mean, as a kid, I grew up in Ohio, which I'm sure people are sick of me saying on this podcast.
Right.
But I grew up in Ohio, and apple cider was a thing that every single fall, you know, your neighbors made apple cider. There were a lot of people with apple orchards. But then there's also, so as a kid, you have a memory of apple cider, but then there's also alcoholic apple cider. And I'm sure you can tell me about how many levels of that, but apple cider is there's so much involved in American history with that drink. Why are you all of a sudden jumping on this like apple cider train? What is it about apple cider that makes you like it?
Well, I, like you, had a conception of what cider was, and it was even different because I grew up in LA. So to hear you talk about, like, you know, orchards nearby in Ohio, that was a very different experience growing up in East Los Angeles. So my only foray into cider was as a kid drinking Martinelli's and thinking, this is cider. And, you know, I heard about the cider movement. As I got into wine, there was, you know, a lot of French ciders that we tried, you know, the Bordelais and the Duponts, and they were sweet. And I really wasn't tracking over the last 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years, or really it's been about 10 since this kind of 2.0 cider movement has taken hold. I haven't really been tracking on it until the last 2 or 3 years. And there's a collection of orchards throughout the northern part of the country, from coast to coast and in between, who have not only a long, rich history, but very, very serious cider makers making sparkling hard cider at a very, very high level. And you have basically two interpretations of that. There's multiple, but within the sparkling cider realm, you have like lower alcohol versions, which really predominate, that are fairly bone dry and are about 6% alcohol. So they're almost beer-like in their style. And then since then, there's a few people who are ramping up the ripeness and the amplitude, finding apples that have similar sugar and acid ratios to wine. And so you're getting 9, 10, 11% alcohol ciders that really taste a lot like wine, especially when they've been aged on their lees and, you know, bottle conditioned that way. So it's a, this is very, very new to me. And as I start to really think about farming and seeing a lot of people in the wine world start to incorporate apple trees into vineyards, all of a sudden I'm thinking, okay, if we want to encourage biodiversity and polyculture and kind of go back to that homestead farm that did multiple things, that didn't just specialize with one monocrop, if that's the way forward for agriculture, then this is a golden opportunity to fuse different fermentable drinks and actually encourage the cross-pollination of that amongst producers.
All right, so hold on. So take like 3 steps back for me.
Yeah.
You're talking about you can actually, and I know the answer to this, but you can actually mix wine with cider in the same drink. That's not sacrilege to blend a juice drinks like that?
Absolutely. Well, I was kind of talking about it in terms of a vineyard orchard combination where you have agroforestry. So I visited a producer in Alsace named Mathieu Dice. His father, Marcel Dice, is super famous. And they have a lot of field blends of like Riesling, Pinot Gris, Gewürztraminer. But within the Grand Cru vineyard, every 8 rows, there's basically orchard trees growing through that. I said, why did you do that? And he's like, well, the orchard trees have the same nutrient needs that grapes do. They share a lot of DNA, and they actually help each other. So the orchard tree actually knows that the grapevine struggles to go deep. And it will actually create pathways for the grapevine to dig deeper its roots. And so the apple tree, they work symbiotically with each other, including nut trees and other things. And so as we start to think of ways to combat climate change, you know, you have a shade of orchard trees is a great way. And actually building a more resilient system by having multiple crops in one area, which encourages, of course, more life in that setting. You know, now there's a reason for that stuff to exist in the vineyard, and we're starting to see that carry over to the cellar where winemakers are not only starting to experiment with cider and cider producers starting to experiment with wine, but they're actually starting to experiment with adding those things with each other into the same fermenting vessel. And so there's a little bit of that going on right now, but look for more of that in the future because the spectrum of flavors and the possibilities that could happen with these fermented beverages is incredible.
So can you ferment other things with grape juice besides apples? I mean, this is a...
Yeah, absolutely.
This, I think, like what?
Like anything. Pears, quince. You could do yuzu. You could do basically anything that fruits is a potential botanical in a fermented beverage. So I think the possibilities are really endless. You have people like Fruksterio in Sweden who are using vegetables as well, you know, doing some really heroic stuff out there. So it's a very, very fun time And we're in a moment where things like apples, let's just take the apple, for instance. If you look at how sturdy and resilient it is, like with grapevines, you know, what is a grapevine trying to do? It's trying to do what we're trying to do, ensure our survival, right? And so a grapevine knows that it's small enough for a bird to carry that berry away. With a apple, it's too big for most birds. So it knows that it needs other animals to spread its seed. So in order to do that, it's really high up, and most of those animals can't climb the tree. So it needs to fall off the tree, and it needs to be sturdy enough to survive that fall and maintain its constitution so the animal eats it and then travels somewhere, poops out the seed, and an apple tree grows. So apples by nature are super sturdy. And that there's functional reasons for that. I mean, the tree is incredibly intelligent and knows how to build fruit that will ensure its survival. And so that theme of sturdiness and resilience carries over into not only the crop that apples produce, it crops up generally way higher than wine, but it also is way more resilient fermentation-wise. You can do a lot of things with very, very minimal input. And the cider wine is really actually incredibly clean and stable, where with wine there's a little bit more of a delicate balance you have to have to work naturally and still have a clean, stable wine. So great opportunities, and there are people who are foraging for wild apples like Andy Brennan of Aaron Burr, who kind of started that movement. And really building out some amazing stuff from just wild apples that he's found that date back to, you know, the very beginnings of American history in the Northeast.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about cider history here really quick.
Yeah. Well,
what can you tell me? Give me like a little intro here.
Yeah, and Grant, I'm not a historian, but apple trees were not native to the United States. Most people speculate that they originated from Central Asia, which is kind of interesting because they have a lot longer history in Europe. But if you look at where they came from in Central Asia, it was this mountainous regions, really extreme, harsh climate. And most of the European versions of where those apple trees are is a lot more temperate. And then you send it to the Northeast, which pilgrims came over with seeds essentially and started planting apple trees, all of a sudden the flavors that were coming off these American ciders in the Northeast were incredibly dynamic. So you have a lot more in common with where apple trees originated, even though apple trees in America are not native at all.
Yeah. And you know, from a standpoint of American history, cider was incredibly important. I mean, if you think about the beginnings of our country, didn't exactly start like somebody said, have a great time. I mean,
it was there from the beginning. It was the major crop. It was the first, like America was known for apples. It was a huge global export for us in early colonial times, and the water was bad. And so people often homesteaded and pooled resources and made cider. That's what you did. And it really wasn't until, you know, the population booms of the 1800s, you know, that you started to see city infrastructure and people abandoning orchards, and then the temperance movement, and, you know, prohibition was like the nail in the coffin. But, you know, after the rise of industrial agriculture, it was really beer that supplanted cider because grain was so cheap. But before that, from the 1600s through a lot of the 1800s, it was all cider. And so, yeah, it's as deep as our history goes, for sure.
Yeah, and it was, you know, when you're at war with one of the largest navies in the world, which America was at our foundation, and then again with the War of 1812, we couldn't bring in much. We had a little bit of Madeira coming in because, you know, Spain and Portugal were also at war. Spain in particular was at war with England. But we needed to pay our Navy with alcohol, and we definitely needed alcohol just as a general thing. And so apple cider, there's a lot of misconceptions. I mean, Johnny Appleseed walked around the country and planted all these apples, and everybody thinks, oh, yeah, for eating. No, he was planting apples to make cider, which was an alcoholic beverage. He was... you know, somebody who I think a lot of people don't think of as the founder of alcoholic cider from at least a name standpoint that you recognize.
Yeah, and from everything I've read about him, he was like obsessed with apple trees. And this idea of planting from seed is something that I've started to entertain within the wine world. But it's really interesting what happens when you plant an apple from seed, because first of all, you're not going to get a crop every year, which is kind of antithetical to someone's like economic, you know, visions, especially the American dream, right? And so then there's the genetic diversity. So what you end up with is, if you take an apple seed from a Red Delicious and just plant it, it's not going to be a Red Delicious that grows up. You're going to get something that might resemble more of a Granny Smith. And let's say there are 6 or 7 seeds in that apple. You plant each individual seed, you might get a completely different tree out of all the seeds within the same apple. So when you think about that, and a lot of animals eating seeds over time and pooping them out in forests all over, the incredible diversity of wild apple trees that historically exist today and has survived this temperance and prohibition and rapid urbanization has dwindled, but is still incredibly diverse, and people are discovering new species all the time, which makes it really interesting when you're dealing with cider, because you have so many tools in the arsenal to create really, really a complex beverage.
Yeah, no kidding. That's amazing. So when you think about how cider is made, and I think it's funny. I think if you were to get into wine 100 years ago, maybe you would come from cider, or 200 years ago, and then you'd think about wine. Whereas now, everybody would come from wine and then go, oh, cider too, I forgot about that. And so does it age? Can you collect it? I mean, Describe to me like what the properties are of cider. Is it vintaged?
Yeah, so if we're talking about sparkling cider, just think about it like champagne. So if in champagne, you have a secondary fermentation. Now, commonly with cider, it's done the same way where you add sugar and you create a secondary fermentation. But the really great cider producers will take a grape must from the next vintage and use that as their sugar to create the secondary fermentation. So you've got this sparkling beverage that's happening very naturally. But like champagne, if you taste a bottle of, let's say, Dom Perignon or something, it was disgorged after 5, 6, 7, 10 years or whatever, right? If you go back to the domain and taste that same bottle that was not disgorged, and so disgorged just means the removal of the lees. If you taste a bottle that was never disgorged, it's way, way fresher than a bottle that had been removed of its lees and topped up with wine and sugar and whatever else. So with cider, there's a lot of these producers are entering into the market with undisgorged ciders. And so the lees are there. They're often more cloudy, a lot like kombucha. But the range of flavors that you get from having the lees be there and the freshness in those ciders will make them, in theory, fairly ageless. And so we're just in the beginning of that movement, so we haven't seen it happen. But I've tasted ciders back to 2013, 2012 that are fresh as a daisy and that you know will go. And the level of complexity that takes hold of those ciders is incredible. So I think we're really sleeping on it, because a lot of these ciders are, you know, $18 to $25, and they're really, really, really serious beverages.
What do you like to eat with cider? Is it a food-friendly thing? Like, what do you?
I think cider is one of the most food-friendly beverages out there. How could it not be? I mean, you have everything from charcuterie to soft cheese to lighter fowl dishes. Think about anything autumnal on your table. And, you know, cider should be a regular part of Thanksgiving. And it's one of the most food-friendly things out there. Anything that has CO2 trapped in the bottle is going to create a lot of textural elements that work really, really well with food. And I think it's incredibly versatile with so many things.
So are you coming at cider as it's good for the environment, it's an important thing, I mean, or a taste, or it's easy to sell, or what is the reason, if you had to pick one, that you're like, cider is why, this is why I want everyone to know about it and why I'm getting into it myself?
I mean, this, and this is the true answer, there's really no separation. I think what's better for the environment is ultimately better for flavor. If you have a chicken that has been fed grain its whole life, those eggs are going to be just pale and yellow, and the eggs are going to be fairly bland. If that chicken was foraging on the ground, pecking at insects and a diversity of insects, those yolks are going to be bright orange, and that the flavor of that egg is going to be tremendous. And so whether it's an animal product or a plant product, the same thing is true. The more diversity and the more intense, like a cultivated monocrop strawberry does not taste the same as a wild strawberry. It just doesn't have that level of flavor and complexity. So the environmental thing to do is to encourage life and to make a cultivated area feel a little bit more wild. And in that, I think the potential for flavor just augments rapidly from there. First of all, you have more yeast populations, you have different yeast populations, and that wealth will not only help your fermentations, but it will create a range of complexity that wouldn't have ordinarily existed. And we even know that from, you know, simple things like Heights Martha's Vineyard, where you have like a wine right next to a eucalyptus grove, and you know, the pollen from that eucalyptus grove gets on the grapes, maybe some of the leaves get in there too. But you have a vineyard with sage and lupin and other things like that, all of a sudden these wild flavors will get into the actual wine. And we're really at the surface of discovering what those flavors are, because so few people create cider and orchards and vineyards in these incredibly diverse places.
That's a fantastic answer, man. I love this. I wish I had a bottle of cider right now to open and drink.
Yeah. I know. There's a few fallen soldiers behind me right now. But these are kind of the heroes. So in the middle there is Hayu Wine Farm. And he's really done some very, very special things in the Pacific Northwest, which has less of a long history with cider, but there's a lot of apples and pears in this area. And if we start talking about the origin of native apple trees being in these mountainous, high elevation areas, you know, I've got Mount Hood due south, which is a huge volcano, year-round skiing. I've got Mount Adams to the north, which is even bigger. And so a lot of these vineyard or orchards that are planted around these mountainous areas are producing incredibly intense cider apples. And Nate's Floreal collaborations with a biodynamic farm that is essentially at the base of Mount Hood with over 80 different varieties planted. So really exciting. And then next to him, that little 500 ml bottle is Aaron Burr, which is Andy Brennan. He wrote a book called Uncultivated, which is a must read for anyone who wants to get into cider. Philosophical, deep, goes into the history, talks about his process. He was an artist for many years in New York before he got into cider. An amazing story. He forages for all his ciders out there in Northeast in New York. So. And then on the other side is also a New York project. That's a combination of Floral Taranis, which is a small producer. He's a part-time teacher that makes amazing cider out of his garage. And then Benford, who actually worked for Andy Brennan, collaborated with him on that too.
That's amazing. Well, that's great. I think people should pick that up. And so, can they buy those ciders you're talking about? I mean, are these ones you can actually find?
Yeah, I think Andy Brennan's are a little bit harder to find, but if you do some digging, you can find the Aaron Burr stuff. Nate's Hayu cider is a lot more readily available, and the Floral Toronto stuff is just so small that it's out there, but it's super, super tiny production. So, but there's more people, Fable Farms in Vermont doing incredible stuff. And yeah, there's a really, really interesting demographic happening in America. And to talk about it globally, I mean, you know, dry cider made like this, and it is bone dry, is not like high-end French cider from Normandy or Brittany. You know, that typically has a lot more sweetness. They're typically a lot more oxidative and apple-y in their flavor, whereas this stuff's a little more fresh and definitely crisp and bone dry. So I think there's, when I announced for my wine club that I wanted to incorporate ciders, or not even wanted to, I am incorporating ciders, we had a lot of people drop. They're just like, I'm just not into that at all. And so I think, you know, it was the same thing when we started embracing New World Chardonnay, because everybody had this conception of oaky, buttery, and I think it's a similar thing right now with cider, where, oh, is it sweet and it's apple-y and, you know, it's, this isn't my jam. And I don't think people understand the level that's happening with, you know, the chosen proud few producers who are doing really special things, because I think America is really at the forefront of great cider in the world right now.
Man, I love this. Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries, dude.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Remember, if you want to try to help, I recommend No Kid Hungry. The Lee Initiative is a fantastic one. SaveRestaurants.org is another great one. There are a lot of charities out there that are working hard. Try to pick one that has been around for a little while and actually can put the money in the right hands. Check out Blinders, and very much looking forward for you to see everything that's on SOM TV. Right now we have a second part of Cellar Stories, which is a show we have that sort of investigates mysteries and things in the wine world. There is a forgotten vineyard that was discovered, hadn't been tended to in almost 100 years or 70 years. Part two of that is now up. Also, Matthew Kaner, a sommelier in Los Angeles, takes us through orange wine. Those are both up, and we have lots more coming on Thursday. So I hope everything is well. Please be safe. Please be kind to whoever you're quarantined with. And please drink enough. Talk to you very soon.